Hello and welcome to iVow. I'm Jenny Prisk and I'm delighted to be your host on this podcast broadcast. Today we are delighted to welcome to our conversation Speaker of the California Assembly, Speaker Emeritus Tony Atkins. Tony, and I think I can call you Tony.
Yes, please.
Welcome to our conversation.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to have you with us, especially in this very, very busy political time for you. You've been called a trailblazer, among a number of other celebratory words about your political career. So when did politics enter your life?
I think politics has always been part of my life. I grew up in a blue-collar, working-class family, and from a very early age, I understood disparity, whether it was from a class perspective, as a woman, watching my mom. So I think I've always been engaged in politics. I do think that politics is personal. I agree very much with Speaker Tip O'Neill. All politics is personal. But I got involved in college. I was a political science major with a focus on community organizing. And it's always sort of been my focus that if you want to get something done, if there's an issue of concern, that it is the way to be successful is to work with other people with similar passions, concerns to get it done.
And you've certainly been very successful in getting things done. I'm just going to also share here for our listeners that you've been a member of the San Diego City Council. You've actually been acting governor for 9 hours, I believe. Was that when Governor Jerry Brown was in hospital? Was he ill?
No, I think he was out of the country.
Out of the country.
He was either in Mexico or China. I can't remember.
I'll come back to that, though, I think. Now you're the Speaker Emeritus of the California State Assembly. And in the November elections of 2016, you're running for state senate in the 39th district. So this is a varied and impressive slate of offices. What keeps you going? What's the energy behind this and the drive behind this to move ever forward in these roles?
Well, I'm not sure anybody's as surprised as I am that I've been able to do those things. But I think it really is the passion behind the office, not exactly the office. I want to work on affordable housing, on health care. Chris Kehoe gave me that opportunity to come be her staff member when she was elected to the city council. And I got to work on such a variety of issues, housing, infrastructure, working in communities that had great needs. And I thought, this is it. This is how you can be successful, get things done, work with people, and frankly, empower people. It isn't really about helping people. It's about empowering people to take control of their lives, their communities, and get things done. And there's nothing like being able to help facilitate that because I happen to have more information about how to do it. And so if I had to think about the resume, I could have never put that together. That's not something, you know, it's not a perspective I would have had.
It wasn't necessarily in your vision for your own future, but because of success in one arena, those steps have just happened and come along because you've been the right woman for the job at the time.
Well, the opportunity came and I took advantage of it. But I think, you know, what I would share with anybody, follow the passion that you have. If it's something you really want to work on, find a way to do that. It doesn't have to be elected office. It could be almost any other venue, but follow your passion. And then it does sort of create its own path and opportunity.
Was your interest, and I think I could sense your passion about affordable housing, was that driven by any of your own upbringing or background?
Oh, yes. You know, I grew up in a house with no running water. We had an outhouse. We carried water from a spring. And I actually didn't know that was a bad thing until, of course, I went to school and learned that other people, you know, live differently. But so it was that. And then when I went into college, I was an intern for Legal Aid Society of seven counties. It was during the Reagan years. So legal aid had been cut. Social services had been cut. They represented seven counties in Southwest Virginia. And I got to work with attorneys working on housing. And I saw that there were people who had way worse conditions than I had. These were working people. You know, they weren't deadbeats. They were working people. And yet they lived in substandard rural conditions. And then lo and behold, I moved to San Diego and I go into some urban communities and I see there are some units of housing that frankly were worse than what I grew up in. And so housing as a passion really comes from the fact that I didn't have good quality housing. But at the same time, now I work with homeless people and they have no housing.
Yes.
So it's something I believe everybody should have a right mm-hmm. to have a roof over their heads.
Mm-hmm.
And I love housing policy. I think it is a foundation mm-hmm. for success for any individual. If mm-hmm. you need to find a job, if you're trying to be successful in your educational endeavors, if you have drug or alcohol addiction problems, mm-hmm. if you have mental health issues, all of those things. If you have housing as a foundation, you can work on all those other things. But if you don't have a roof over your head, it's really hard to be successful in any other part of your life.
Mm-hmm. And how are you finding the situation in California, coming back to our state? I know it's a huge issue, or both of those, affordable housing and homelessness. How are we doing?
Not well. I mean, California is an incredible state. We're the fifth largest economy in the world. We have turned things around from a decade of recession,
mm-hmm.
but our biggest issue for quality of life right now is housing. Mm-hmm. I don't care what level of income you have. You can be poor, homeless, you can be middle class, you can have money, and affordability in terms of having a home is becoming more and more out of reach for everybody. It is going to be one of the biggest economic issues we have in our state.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a crisis level.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to continue to work on legislation to get a permanent source of funding for housing, to look at issues that will help us build more units. Part of it is supply demand.
Mm-hmm.
So it is our biggest challenge, I think, right now.
Mm-hmm. I know that in this year, I think you've put 10 bills before Governor Jerry Brown, and I believe to date 9 of them have passed.
Oh, I can't remember, but we felt pretty good
about
our legislative package. Mm-hmm. And, you know, on a whole range of issues, whether it was human trafficking, which has become a huge,
mm-hmm.
I think we've now become educated as a community
mm-hmm.
On the real dilemma of human trafficking right in front of us.
Yes. People are realizing it actually does exist right here on our border and in our city.
Well, in our city, in our very communities. Mm-hmm. And so there is a coalescing of law enforcement, social service agencies, government trying to figure out how to combat this problem where really marginal people are pulled into this, not just women, mm-hmm. Boys and girls,
mm-hmm.
Women. There's also labor trafficking, which
yes.
is something we haven't really understood or addressed very well either. So there's a lot of work on human trafficking. I had a couple of human trafficking bills that do different sorts of things to try to tackle the issue. I had a medical interpreter's bill. We have the Affordable Care Act. We mm-hmm. are providing more health care to more Californians, upwards of 3 million more people on our state program. But we also speak more than 200 languages and dialects in California.
Mm.
So we need to make sure as we're expanding access to healthcare that people actually have translators who can help them understand how to be compliant, how to get their questions answered. So the more we're able to provide services, the more we see we need to adjust how we do things to include everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So I had that bill signed by the governor so that we will work on interpretation services, which will really mean true access for health care for mm-hmm. those who speak different languages. So, you know, people ask me, what is your number one priority? And they want me to give one answer. I'm like, well, affordable housing, but infrastructure, education, health care, job creation, how can all of those things not be part of what we need to do? So I have a wide variety mm-hmm. of interest and want to work on all these issues. And you're going to see over time that the course of my legislation, equality for the transgender community, updating our laws to mm-hmm. deal with gender identity issues.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I love this work. I love this work. There is nothing like being able to push the ball forward, particularly for marginalized, disenfranchised communities who really deserve equal access
mm-hmm.
In society.
Yes, and to be treated with respect, like human beings as they are. We're very fortunate that we have you pushing forward on these issues and on these bills. Will you continue this? I'm going to say, because we know you're going into the Senate after the November 8th
election. This is where I do knock on wood. Sorry. I take nothing for granted.
You're probably very smart, and you understand this.
Yeah, so that was me knocking on wood.
All right. Well, we know now that that was Tony knocking on wood. Let me speak from the point of view where I feel sure that you will. You'll continue, it would seem, to keep pushing these various issues, or will there be others that you will add in because this role will change for you?
Well, I go where the issue seems to take me. Mm-hmm. You know, when we look at issues like immigration, there's changing perceptions and work that we need to do. You know, the solid issues will be the issues, housing, healthcare, job creation, equality. But when we see something come up that needs to be addressed, a couple of years ago, what we learned during sequestration at mm-hmm. the federal level was money was being cut out of services for veterans. So the wait, if you were transitioning out of the military to sign up and get benefits, or if, you know, that you deserve, that the country owes you, mm-hmm. it was taking 2 to 3 years for veterans to actually get approval for their benefits because there weren't enough service providers to help process those claims. Mm-hmm. The state saw that as a problem. Mm-hmm. And while it's a federal issue, we care about our veterans. California has a huge military history, legacy, and population.
We do.
So we stepped forward. We had more money than the federal government at that time. We created strike teams up and down the state to work together with our federal partners and get those benefits processed. And we got it down to less than a year of wait time. Those are the kinds of solutions I think citizens, voters, Californians expect. I don't care if you're local government, your state government, your federal government, we pay taxes. Mm-hmm. How are you going to serve us? So I think there's always problems, issues to be solved mm-hmm. that you have to figure out how you're going to do it. And that's stuff I love too. Cutting through the bureaucratic red tape, the no, I can't do that. No, I hate that phrase. No, I can't do that. Well, what about how can you do that? And I know it won't be easy and there are barriers, but how can you do that? That's what I look forward to. So who knows what the issues will be? They're ever changing. Did I know I would get to do transgender legislation that would allow gender identity as it relates to birth certificates and death certificates? Mm. If you had asked me a decade ago, when I was in the city council, mm-hmm. do you perceive you'll ever get to do transgender, you know, birth certificate? I would have looked at you like, oh, wow, I don't see that because mm-hmm. we weren't there.
Right. And now we are.
And now we are.
And finally and thankfully, things are changing. You're a woman in politics and a woman who's been in politics for a number of years now. I'm not going to count them. That's not important. But is it different from a male's journey through politics to be a female in politics?
You know, it is, and you will, if you ask probably any woman elected official, they're going to tell you some level of yes. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you, I haven't exactly felt it like some of my peers, but all we have to do today is look at how Hillary Rodham Clinton has been treated in this election. And you cannot tell me there is not a double standard. Mm-hmm. There is an absolute double standard, mm-hmm. and it is glaring right now, and a mm-hmm. reminder to me to always be supportive of women. She is the most qualified candidate by far and has been the entire election, mm-hmm. Republicans, Democrats, by far. Mm-hmm. And yet what she has had to endure.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how she's still standing. When I look
she's
at her,
she's got that stamina thing going for
her. Yes, she has. She has. And I mean, when even our current president, President Obama, comes out and says she is far more qualified to be president than I am, and yet still the rocks are thrown. Are you disappointed? I've read this in one of your comments about the number of women running for office. And do you think perhaps this 2016 election year is going to be putting women off?
Well, I think it will do both. Mm-hmm. I think it will remind women that, yes, there is a double standard. Be prepared for that. Mm-hmm. But I think it will also energize young women mm-hmm. and older women that we deserve to be there as much. We are more than 50% of the population, mm-hmm. and yet we're not represented in the same numbers. And part of that is that age-old thing. A woman will look at a resume and say, here are the qualifications required. Oh, I only have 8 of those, I can't possibly do this job. The studies have proven that. Men will look at it and say, oh, I have 4 of those skill sets. I can do this job. Mm-hmm. So there is still that. There is still that. But I think this election is going to inspire more women than discourage.
That's very good to hear. So I'm going to go out on a limb, and because I'm saying it, that when we have a second President Clinton in the White House, and this time President Hillary Clinton, will the nation change? I know it won't change instantly, but do you think that the landscape will start to look different because for the first time we would have a woman in the White House?
Well, I think if we are to look at our first African-American president and say, how has the landscape changed? I think there's been change. I think some of it has been good change, mm-hmm. and I think some of it has been a backlash. Mm-hmm. And I think we should anticipate both of those things, but it should not deter us. It should not stop us from strongly moving forward to encourage our young girls to run for office, mm-hmm. to encourage women who've been in business for 40 years and retire, like Shirley Weber here locally.
Yes.
She ran for office. She has a lot to contribute. So I think it's both yet again, and I think it's up to us individually mm-hmm. to make it positive mm-hmm. And to deal with whatever backlash may come.
Mm-hmm. Do you always feel fully accepted by your male peers?
No. I think I was only mm-hmm. the third woman speaker, mm-hmm. the second Democratic woman speaker, and no, I don't think so. I think there is this expectation that that leadership has been male predominantly, mm-hmm. and I think we still have work to do. And I think there's a number of good, strong women mm-hmm. in the legislature. Hopefully we'll get more elected, and we're going to continue to push forward.
Mm-hmm. I think so. So if a young girl comes to you, and I'm sure they do, and says, oh, you know, Ms. Atkins, I'd like to get into politics, is there a line of advice you give them, how they should start, what they should think about and focus on?
Well, yes. I volunteered. And I think there's nothing like volunteering to learn, whether you might like it or not. But I think it is, if you desire to do this, if you're interested, go for it. If I can help you, I will. Do the internships. But again, it is follow your passion, and yes, you can. You can do whatever you set your mind to do. And that's our responsibility to do that for young boys and young girls, both. Mm-hmm. And to make sure that we are making it possible. Diversity and change mm-hmm. happen in any workplace because we make it happen. It doesn't just happen. Mm-hmm. We have to work towards it. Mm-hmm. And so for young people, it really is follow your passion. Work hard. Mm-hmm. Work hard. Mm-hmm. But also recognize that you can do whatever you want to do with the right kind of support.
Mm-hmm. And that support has to be vital, I would imagine. Have you had good support from mentors over the years that you've developed and grown into all these offices?
I have. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, Chris Kehoe, of course, is my mentor. She gave me the opportunity to be in office. But I would say, Dee Dee Alpert, Lucy mm-hmm. Calais, mm-hmm. Susan Davis, of course, mm-hmm. Denise Duchaney. You know, Shirley Weber has been a mentor for a long time, mm-hmm. and I know she wasn't exactly aware of it. But I'm also going to say my mom, because mm-hmm. She would not think of herself as being a strong mentor to me, but by her very life's work, a blue-collar, working poor woman who was a seamstress, who pushed her kids to get an education and wanted more for us. She was tougher than I've ever been because she put up with a lot and she still kept moving forward. So she was a great mentor. And I had a great mentor in college, Steve Fisher, who was my political science advisor, who really...
Was that at Yale?
Oh gosh, Yale. I went to Emory and Henry College.
Oh, okay.
I did spend a little time at Harvard, little time.
Yes.
But he was at Emory and Henry College. He was a wonderful political science advisor. He's still my friend today. Mm-hmm. When I was sworn in as speaker, he came all the way from Virginia to watch me be sworn in. And he's the one that really pushed me not to be a victim, even though I'd grown up poor, Appalachian, everything against me. Don't be a victim. Work mm-hmm. with others. Imagine the world you want to live in and then work to create it, was the thing he told us. And so, you know, I've had that as a mantra. I've used it and told people about it again and again, but it really has been. And I am very lucky to have had wonderful people. You know, Chris Kehoe and I are still, we're like sisters today. And she has been as proud of every accomplishment I've had more so than if they were her own.
Yes, we have interviewed her for this series, and she spoke very, very highly of your successes and with a great deal of pride. It was lovely to hear it. So it's rather nice that you refer back to her and that relationship that you formed. Sadly, we are coming to the conclusion of this conversation, and I just had one quick, lighter kind of question. If you weren't in politics, what would you and your wife, Jennifer, perhaps be doing together, or what would you be doing with your life if you weren't in politics? Do you even get a minute to think about that?
Oh. Well, I would tell you right now, given my busy life, I'd love to be a dog walker. That would be my passion. I adore my dogs, yes. Haley and Joey.
Yes. I'm glad we have them on the conversation.
Thank you. They keep me sane.
Yes, I'm sure.
But, you know, I'm pretty sure that if I weren't doing this, I would be engaged in some sort of social service work, whether it's affordable housing. I was a director of a community clinic, women's health clinic. I love that work. I would just follow the next passion.
And so as we close the interview, and this is an election year, and we have our fingers crossed, I won't go into that specifically again about the Senate for your sake, but do you have closing remarks that you'd like to say, perhaps looking back on 2016 and the finer points of 2016 from your own perspective?
Well, I have to say it was a really significant year in the legislature on a number of budgetary things. We added childcare slots. I mean, you know, we're continuing to push the ball forward. I would say it's been a crazy year politically. I got to be honest, I cannot wait for this to be over.
I want
the world to return to some form of sanity and us to focus on the work that we need to do. But I just have to say, as I end my time in the Assembly, I still feel incredibly fortunate to have been given these opportunities. I love my constituents. I love community work. I feel honored each and every day to walk into the Capitol, to be here, a little girl from Appalachia, you know, who didn't think the mainstream world was about her. Now I'm helping other people realize the world is about you. You are the one that matters. So that's what I feel very thankful for.
Well, we're very thankful that you have been kind to spend this time with me this afternoon and with iVow. And I think on those very profound words, we will conclude this conversation. Thank you, Speaker Emeritus Tony Atkins.
Thank you, Jen.